Welcome to the Monday, October the 1st Big Book Awakening meeting. Alize is the moderator, and we will start the recording in just a moment.
If you're not sharing, please mute yourself by clicking the mute icon on your screen, or if you're on your phone, *6, or by pressing the microphone on your handset to minimize noise in our meeting line. Unmute to share by clicking on your computer icon or *6 on the phone. I think someone's just come on who hasn't unmuted. Okay, now everyone's muted, it looks. So please unmute and join us. Please now unmute and join us in the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee. To build with me and to do with me as thy wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witnesses to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. So this BBA UK teleconference meeting is open to all 12 steps programs from anywhere in the world. However, we kindly ask that only those who are working the Big Book Awakening process and are currently sober from their physical craving share their experience in this meeting. All are welcome to listen, and anyone can pose questions in the third part of the meeting, starting from 7:50 p.m. British Summer Time. So how our meeting works? Our meeting focuses on the precise directions for working the steps as described in the first 103 pages of the Big Book using the Big Book Awakening Guide. Our meeting is set up in three parts. Part one, we begin by having our speaker share for 20 minutes. Part two, at 7:30 British Summer Time, we open the meeting up for general sharing and comments for 20 minutes. We kindly ask that only those who have worked the Big Book Awakening process up to the topic step that we are focusing on share in this portion of the meeting. And part three, at 7:50 British Summer Time, we have a crossfire meeting for 20 minutes. This is the time that anyone can ask a question or comment on anyone's share. A reminder to stay on the topic, please. If you have a question unrelated to the topic, please contact someone after the meeting. Our members are happy to answer questions. So if you cannot stay until the end of the meeting, please feel free to sign off as quietly as you can. So before we continue the meeting, please, everyone, be sure that your line is muted by pressing the mute icon on your screen or phone, especially if you're on mute at any time during the meeting. If you dialed in by phone, please be sure your network provider does not charge for this type of call or dial back in using the internet. So now I have the great pleasure to introduce Leanne from California, who will speak on the topic of Step 4, pages 68, bottom, page 71, sex inventory and ideal. So for 20 minutes, Leanne, please unmute. Would you like me to give you a five-minute warning before your time ends?
That would be great. I'll actually also set my little timer here so that...
Great.
I can keep track of my time as well.
Okay.
So I'll get started.
First, I'd
like to thank Amy and everybody involved in asking me to share today in the UK. My name's Leanne, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I'm honored to be asked to share today. I've had the opportunity to share in a couple countries and across the United States, and it's always an honor when anyone asks me to share, and whether it's specifically on a topic or my story. Just to give you a little background about me, I've been working the Big Book Awakening now for, about 9 years. My sobriety date's November 9th, 2005. I am a recovered alcoholic. I've also done drugs, but I am certainly powerless over drugs, where I don't know that I totally qualify as an addict, but I certainly do qualify as the real alcoholic that's described, as you all know, in the first 52 pages of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Just so that I can clarify what that is when I put alcohol into my body, I break out into a physical craving. At bottom line, I just don't, I don't metabolize alcohol like someone who's not an alcoholic. I lose all power, choice, and control over alcohol and the amount that I drink and what I do after I drink. And if you can relate to that, then you're probably in the right group. I have not always had this type of recovery. The first 4 years, I don't know if any of you have heard any of my recordings, but I share this a lot. The first 4 years of me being an Alcoholics Anonymous here in the United States, actually in San Diego specifically, I was involved in a lot of groups that were open discussion groups, and there was really never a solution. And I think a lot of us that come to the Big Book Awakening, at least what I've experienced here in San Diego in the United States, people that come here maybe have a substantial amount of time, maybe just a few years or whatever, but have found that that a lot of what's in the Big Book is not in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. At least that's how it is out here. I don't know how it is in the UK. But, you know, it tells us on page 45 of the Big Book that what the book is about. Middle paragraph, it says, that's what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself that will help you solve your problems. A power greater than yourself that's going to help us solve our problems. I'm going to talk about sex today, but our problems are not just sex problems. Our problems are our internal problem. And the Big Book is also very clear on telling me that I'm beyond human aid. So anyone who wants to describe Alcoholics Anonymous as a self-help program is misinformed, because that's not what this program is about. And I'm sure that many of you, if you're up to the point of doing sex inventory, you've seen, and the Big Book is very clear, that beyond human aid, where we are hopeless. And even when we look at the stories and more about alcoholism, I mean, every single one of those people that relapse wasn't because they weren't going to meetings, weren't because they weren't calling their sponsor, wasn't because they weren't doing 90 and 90, wasn't because they, you know, it was all because they failed to enlarge their spiritual life. And so when we start to talk about, you know, inventory, specifically sex inventory, how is God going to help me in this area? You know, like, I don't know that I really want to put God in this area, but God gave us our sex powers, and that's what the Big Book talks about. So one of the things that we have to be extremely clear on is, number one, are we the real deal? Whether we're Al-Anon, addict, alcoholic, whatever it is, do I see that I can relate to this physical, mental, and spiritual, especially people? Big Book's also going to say, if I don't have the physical aspect of this disease, I'm not the real deal. And if I'm not the real deal, then I can't help somebody who is the real deal. But I fall in that category. I do qualify as the real alcoholic, as I said, and not by just my drunken stories, but because what happens to me when I put alcohol into my body? And do I see that without a spiritual solution to my problem, I'm going to be hopeless? And so I love how this book is written. The next chapter talks that we have to come to believe in a power greater than ourselves. And every step from steps 2 through 12 are going to talk specifically about what we need to solve a problem, and that's God. So it's going to tell me that I need to come to believe that a power greater than myself is going to restore me to sanity. And then in 3, I got to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to this power. And for some of us, we don't even know what that power is. I always found it funny that we have to come to believe in something we've never believed in before. And now that we kind of started believing in it, the next step is going to tell us we've got to turn everything over, not just our drugs, drinking, and fixing, controlling, and chaos creating, right? But it's going to tell me to turn everything over. How am I supposed to trust something that I can't see? How am I supposed to believe that something that I can't see is going to help me in every area of my life? And for a lot of us, this is a dilemma. You know, I don't have an option C. It's either God is going to be everything or God is going to be nothing, and what's my choice to be? And so I have a life or death situation here. Either I die a spiritual death, or I take God's help, and he's going to help further me in every area of my life. And that throws us into this this next process of this inventory, you know, and I've never really understood why anybody ever had a problem with writing inventory. When I got to this part, I was like, I am ready to be rid of the things that have been blocking me from having freedom and power, right? And that's, and this whole process of doing inventory is just to do that. So when we put a name in that first column, whether it's the first column of our resentment inventory or the first, or the name of the person on the sex inventory, what we're going to see, we're in the position when we start writing names down. Let's just specifically talk about people, right? Because I know we can also write about institutions and principles and inventory, but because we're talking about people, we're not having an institution or a principle in our, right? It's always a person. What we see when we write inventory, whether it's an inventory or a inventory, it's never that first column. It's never the person right on the inventory. Really, to be able to, what's been
Leanne, sorry to interrupt you. I think your line is breaking up. Can you hear us properly?
Because I
can hear you, but almost like robotic. So we can't hear clearly. I don't know where there's the signal.
Something else here. Hold on a second.
Now it's better.
Is that better?
Yeah, much better.
Okay, good.
Sorry to interrupt you, but we just can hear you.
Thank you for interrupting me. Please let me know if that happens again so I can fix whatever it is. Try to.
Thank you.
Are we good? Okay. So look at inventory when we're writing that first column. Right. Put that person's name in the first, whether it be our resentment or our sex inventory. It turns out that it's never really about that person in the first column. What we're seeing is, a perfect example is when we write inventory, and I want to talk resentment inventory, talk about sex inventory, because I think it's, because when we write that first column, the reason in the second column, and then we look at the seven areas of self in the third column. What I'm trying to get is, what's the fear that's blocking me? And see, because fear is what fuels that movement. And the fears are not things like being afraid of snakes or sharks in the water. Those are valid fears. You need to be afraid of those things. I'm talking about debilitating fears that block us, power greater than ourselves.
Sorry, Leanne, sorry. Me? Sorry, it's still the same. So I'm not quite sure what's happening. But you're breaking up.
Hold on a second. Let me see if I this from not using my. Hold on.
It's just about one or two words out of every 10 that drop.
Can you guys hear me better now?
Yes.
Oh yes. Okay, much better. I got off my headset, and so maybe being on the headset was bad. Can you hear me better now?
Much better.
Yes. Perfect. Okay. All right. I don't know where I started breaking up, but I will try to start from where I think is the most important thing to talk about, and that's the first column. Did everybody understand that first column?
Yeah, we
that
got
when we put the name in the first. Okay, yes. Good. So we write our name. We write that person's name in the first column, and we think what we're writing about is about that person, right? We think that, you know, we're in the position of pointing our finger this whole time at that person. Like, Joe, he did this to me. You know, I'm mad at him because he treated me like this. He was mean to me, blah, blah, blah. And then when we look at the seven areas of self, what we see is that we've been assigning roles to people this whole time because we have a preconceived idea of how that relationship's supposed to look in our minds. And when people aren't living up to those roles, why then there's a fear, there's an underlying fear there that's fueling that resentment. So for me, what I saw is when I turn that page over and I look at the realization, what I'm seeing is it's never really about that person in the first column. Whether it's a person's name in the first column of the resentment inventory or the sex inventory, when I write in that person's name, it's never about that. It's always about what is it that's keeping me blocked from God? Where are these fears coming from? Why do I have these fears? And I'm going to ask God to remove them, because I have to be able to see what I find objectionable about this whole inventory. So now moving over to sex. So now that we've done a thorough resentment inventory, inventories, we're able to see and be humbled and putting ourselves in a position to be able to see that this person's sick like me. A lot of times a person in the first column of our resentment inventory also ends up on our sex inventory. Not all the time, but most of the time. If you're going to put someone on your sex inventory, 99% of the time that person has a resentment inventory written about them too as well, right? My ex-husband, for example, my ex-husband was on my resentment inventory as well as on my sex inventory. Sex inventory, also realized, isn't always about sex. So don't feel that whenever you're writing a sex inventory about, when you need to write a sex inventory, was it a relationship that you had? Go back and remember, you don't have to write a sex inventory on every single person you had sex with. If I had to do that, it would be impossible. Like, I'd have to categorize people because it would be impossible. Most of us who are alcoholic and addict probably had sex encounters that we don't even remember. So being able to, it's not about writing every single one, but what we do is those ones that we had relationships with that were most important, obviously each get their own sheet. If I had a series of one night stands, or, you know, a number of them that I can remember, I would write one night stands as my sex inventory. I also was, part of an adult entertainment business, so that I could write that in up in there too, like categorize that. So it's not so much about looking at that person in the first column, because what does it say and ask us when we are looking at our sex inventory? You know, we all have sex problems, is what the big book says. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? We've reviewed our conduct over the past years. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, right? These are the questions that we're going to be asking ourselves. Where had I been dishonest in this relationship? Where had I been selfish or inconsiderate? Who did I hurt? Did I hurt the person that I wrote down that I hurt? But did I also hurt maybe their parents or maybe their kids? I need to be able to see all the harm that I caused around this whole inventory, the sex inventory. Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy or suspicion or bitterness? You know, these are questions I ask myself, and these are questions that are on the inventory. By the way, all of these questions that show up on your sex inventory, if you're pulling them off the website, that sex inventory, all are pulled out of the big book. We're not adding or deleting or changing anything that the questions in the big book aren't already asking you. So when I'm looking at all this, in this way, I try to shape a sane and a sex ideal for my sex future. But when I'm looking at these things, I'm also asking myself, and what I noticed as I was writing all my sex inventory is I dated the same person. They just had a different name, body, and time, because there was a pattern, you know, and I'm able to see that. It's not just always about finding out about yourself either, but it's also I didn't write inventory just to find out about myself. It was to face and be rid of the things in myself which are blocking me from God, myself, and from others. So as I write this sex inventory, do I think that when I'm going into it? No, I think I'm just going to be writing about what I'm angry with. But what I'm really seeing is it showing me some humility. I'm looking at the things objectionable about myself. What I find objectionable about the person? It's what do I find objectionable about myself? You know, that I was selfish, that I was not honest, I was insincere.
Leanne, that's the 5-minute warning. That's the 5-minute warning.
As you write sex inventory is a lot easier to write than our resentment. And if some of you have already noticed, when you look at seven areas of self, it's hard to be able to look at what it is that, you know, like, or for you to be able to write things like, I am the best sister, fear of not being the best. Others should see that I am a good person, not being good enough. That's what we look at when we do resentment inventory. When we look at sex inventory, it's pretty much cut and dry as to what it is that I'm writing about and what it is, because it's asking me the question to make that answer. One of the things I want to talk to is that it also asks, it's going to ask you a question. It's going to say, what should I have done different? One of the things that we're not supposed to write is to not say, should have never gotten involved. You don't get to write that. You have, how would you have been different in the relationship had it worked out? You know, what would it have looked like if I would have not behaved that way? So when I'm looking and finding out about the things that are actionable, I'm asking, looking at my behavior in this relationship, what is it that I could have done different? How could I have created instead of care? How could I have been a person? And every single time for me, it boiled down to, I should have been relying on God, because none of this is something I could fix on my own power. I have to be able to go to God for all of this, to be able to look at my situation, to be able to open my eyes so that can give me a clear vision as how it is that he wants me to. And when I go into writing my sex ideal, like if you would have asked me to write a sex ideal prior to me taking even the first step, I would have written something completely different than by the time that I get to inventory to write my sex ideal. Because at this point, I'm now writing a sex ideal based on how I need to be as a woman to my husband, how I need to be as a wife to my husband, how I need to be as a mother to my children. Because sex ideal isn't just always about how you need to go and look for a partner in life, if especially if you're coming from being, you know, from a married state like myself, the person that I want to be. There's a really great proverb and in the Bible, and share this because this is what my sex ideal is, and my sex ideal basically comes from a proverb. Proverbs 3, and it gives me an idea of the person that I want to be married to. So it says this, a good woman is hard to find and worth far more than diamonds. Her husband without reserve and never has reason to do it, never spiteful. She treats him just all her long life. She shops for yarns and cottons and enjoys knitting it. She's like a trade ship that sails to far places and brings back a lot of surprises. She's up before dawn preparing for her family, organizing her days over a field and then with money she puts aside, plants the garden. Seeing in the morning, she dresses for work.
So sorry, we can't hear you again clearly.
Oh no.
So sorry. So I'm not sure what it is that you need to do, but do you mind maybe just rereading the quote once we hear you a bit better?
Yes. Let me try back on that again. Should I try that?
Yes, please. You want
me to? Okay, let me try that again.
We may just have an unstable line tonight. We apologize.
It might. Let's see. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, you know, I know that my time's coming up to a quick end.
It's okay.
Here,
it's okay.
Is cool? Yeah. Is that okay?
Yeah.
I basically want to talk a little bit about the sex ideal that we need. Can you guys hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes. It's still breaking up a bit, though.
I think it's just our connection that we have here. Let me try to move to a different room. Hold on. Okay, can you hear me now?
Leanne?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay, is it breaking up at all?
I think it's better.
You do? Are you?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So this, I want to just, I'll finish with this.
Yeah, the quote, yes.
Okay, I'll finish with the quote, because this is the sex ideal, and I'll read to you a portion of my sex ideal. Being married, my sex ideal is obviously different from somebody who's going to be single. When you look at your ideal as a single person, and how you want your mate to be, you know, that is different than, say, for instance, how you would have written it prior to being even going through this work and even have taken a first step. So by the time we get through resentment inventory, sex inventory, my ideal of how I want my partner to look if I'm a single person is going to be different than it was before I took the first step. But now that I'm married, how is my sex ideal supposed to look? How should I be as a wife, a mother? And for me, my sex ideal falls in what I found I want to be as a woman to my husband is a Proverbs 31 woman. And I'll finish with this. Let's see here. The Proverbs 31 woman, if you've never read it, is actually a beautiful proverb about a woman who is faithful, loyal, and then a good provider for her family. And that's the person that I strive to be. Portion of it says this: when she speaks, she has something worthwhile to say, and she always says it kindly. She keeps an eye on everyone in her household and keeps them all busy and productive. Her children respect her and bless her. Her husband joins her with words of praise. Many women have done wonderful things, but you have outclassed them all. Mislead and beauty soon fades. The one to be admired and praised is the woman who lives in the fear of God, gives everything she deserves, fest in her life with praise. And that's where I'll thank you.
Thank you, Leanne. Thanks very much for speaking to us. And I'm sorry about the line, but thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. So it's now time for general sharing. Anyone who has worked the Big Book Awakening process up to this step can share at this time. So the topic is step 4, sex inventory and ideal. So please stay on this topic. We have 2 minutes shares tonight, as we have quite a few of us on the line. So please self-time. As the moderator, I will signal you to wrap up if you go past your time limit, so that everyone who wants to share can and have a chance to do so. So who would care to share on this topic? Please go ahead. Someone has unmuted. Hello?
No?
Would anyone care to share on the topic of the sex inventory and sex ideal?
Hi, it's Judith. I'll go ahead and take a turn.
Please, Judith. Thank you.
Leanne, thank you so much. I listen to you a lot on every single part of the step before I go to my group and help the group. And I'm just so thrilled to have you here as a speaker. So thank you so much for giving us your time and your insights. And you're so succinct and incredibly succinct at pulling those steps all the way through. And I love that. I'm trying to learn from you about how to be that succinct. So I appreciate that. When I did the sex inventory in the BBA, it was completely different than any time I'd ever done it before, either in the Big Book, doing the Big Book, or any other inventory of the sex inventory that I'd accomplished before. And this time it blew my mind. And this was 2 inventories below, because I've done it a couple times now. And I had 19 significant people. Before, all I wrote was, I'm married and I don't think I need to do this. And but now, you know, I looked at, well, a couple, now it's 2.5 years old, the particular one that I did 19. And it's so many incredible things came out of it. And I absolutely saw how I used to act and how I am likely to act in relationships with others when I get threatened, hurt, or interfered with. And it won't be as subtle, perhaps, because those guys I used to screw over by screwing their brothers or screw over by screwing their best friend or just some really awful and ugly behavior. But what did come out of it is what you said. It wasn't about them at all. What came out of it is how I now pray this every day, and now I seem to be living it a lot more, which is I want to live and be the kind and generous, caring, open and honest person that I would like to be, a person who speaks up, doesn't say yes when they mean no and no when they mean yes. And just so many things came out of it. And for quite a long time, a year and a half, I prayed the same kind of way every day. And now I notice, okay, since I did the last one back in probably March, you know, May perhaps, in this last round with Natasha, there were certainly a lot less people on it. And now it was actually more focused on my marriage to my incredible husband. I was in SLA when I actually got this the first time, and 20 years ago, and I was able to, you know, to have receive a person like so beautiful as my husband to be with. And one last thing I just wanted to share was what came out of it, though, out of this particular one when I did the 19 a couple of years ago, was that I had severely hurt my ex-husband, who was a heroin addict, and that I had never wanted to make amends because I was afraid of him. And the fear was so lifted through that period of time of doing these inventories enormously that I actually went out, found him, searched for him and found him. I thought he was dead, but he wasn't. And I found him and I made amends to him in full. And we cried for like 3 hours. And it was just the most incredible thing that ever came out of a sex inventory. With that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Muted.
Thank you, Judith. Thank you. Would anyone else like to share on the sex inventory and sex ideal, step four? Please go ahead.
Hi, my name is Gemma and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Gemma. Please go ahead.
Thank you.
Unmuted.
So much for your chair on the sex ideal. I must admit that I went through a BBA way and I absolutely was in awe of how one, the steps are put together, but especially through the BBA, because I was so glad to first do my resentments and my fears before I did my sex ideals, especially my fears. I would have never been able to face my my sex inventory without facing my fears first. And I loved what you shared about it doesn't matter how many people, my God, are in your sex ideal, at the end of the day, you're dating the same person. And that came out really, really strongly in my sex ideal. And I really like how the BBA took it into really big depths of it. And I really enjoy that exercise at the end when they say, right, you know, forget about you shouldn't have done this or you shouldn't have gone out with that person is today, what would you do differently? And you collect all that information and you reach out to your higher power and you come out with this sex ideal. And that is something that I actually work on today, though it's with a relationship with a partner, but also relationship with family and with others. There's a lot of principles in that sex ideals that actually go across the board. And what I also discovered in the sex ideal through the BBA work, I used to be a massive, massive workaholic. And my sponsor advised me to take through the BBA for that with my relationships to work, which was an absolute eye-opener as well, because I used to treat it like my higher power, like a person. So yeah, thank you, because I did that 6 months ago. So it's really nice to hear about it and think, oh, I need to go back and read about my sex ideals still if I'm still current. So thank you so much for your share. Really took a lot out of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Gemma. Would anyone else like to have a go? Please go ahead.
Hi, it's Britt. Is it okay if I go ahead?
Hi. Hi, Britt. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for your chair, and well done for hearing through the technical difficulties. But what I was struck by when I did this work was, yes, getting to the idea at the end, but actually, and I think you touched on it, seeing my patterns and seeing what preceded encounters. And for me, it was particularly social situations and particularly professional ones, like professional, something to do with work and a social thing and feeling insecure and like I need an anchor or a person or something. So it was just very revealing. So in addition to not so much the same sort of people, for me, the pattern was my stuff, what was leading me to act out in those ways. Necessarily the people, although I did also see that I tended to have a disease in me called to a disease in somebody else, and I was often with an addict of some kind, slaw, alcohol, booze, codependency. So yes, all of that was very revealing. I am single, I'm widowed and single, but not quite to the point necessarily of looking, but I'm hoping something comes my way, but I will bear this in mind. But yeah, just it was really revealing to me the whole patterns that preceded me, preceded those kind of meetings, experiences, etc. So anyway, thank you so much for your honesty and coming to share.
Thank you, Britt. Thanks for sharing. Would anyone else like to share? Please go ahead. Hello?
Hello, Sarah, Compulsive Rita.
Hi, Sarah. Please go ahead.
So I did my BBA way 6 months ago as well. And since then, I have stopped the pattern that I've been doing for the last, I suppose, 30 years of just feeling so lonely and then just grabbing the first person that came along and then using them to fill the hole and then using alcohol to kind of numb the pain, so I couldn't actually handle any intimacy, and the people were usually addicts of some kind as well. So now, having my sex ideal, I have been on a few dates and mostly, yeah, I just see that maybe they have an addiction or maybe something is not quite right. So it's nice to have been able to stop the pattern of sort of hurting other people through my need for company. So it's really satisfying to have been able to do that and to be able to sort of stand back and actually look at people and to get rid of what I thought I knew as well and actually realise that I was actually frightened of intimacy, and so I would need to kind of find somebody completely different than the people I had been looking for. So, yeah, it's a peaceful place to be for once, which I'm really grateful for. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. Thanks for sharing. Would anyone else like to share? I'll jump in. Oh, hang on, go ahead.
Hi, it's Shirley. Sorry.
That's okay, Shirley, go ahead.
I didn't
ahead.
Know whether to just unmute and wait or announce. Hi, it's Shirley. I'm a recovered over alcoholic and recovering codependent. Leanne, thank you so much for your share tonight. And as has been said before, thank you for putting up with the inevitable technical difficulties. Sex inventory, it's an interesting one for me. As was shared previously, I've been through the steps before, and when I've arrived at sex inventory, being always in a long-term relationship, I was married for a very long time, I was kind of advised, well, unless you're having any difficulties, you kind of don't need to do that, and didn't really do it at all. So to be honest, I kind of came away not really understanding how that was applicable to me. And I've heard lots of women in fellowships talk about this, particularly women who are in either a long-term relationship or a marriage. And then I came to BBA, and I've been through the BBA steps, and we got to sex inventory, and oh man, what a difference, what an eye-opener that has been. For me, the difference is, well, first of all, by doing it thoroughly, I reviewed the long-term marriage, which has sadly ended, and my current long-term relationship, as well as another long-term relationship. And I took a really careful, close look at what had gone on. These people had come up on my resentment, as you pointed out. So I'd already looked at what they did to me and what my part in that was and what have you. And it came to sex inventory, and it really was revealing to see my own very subtle, almost subconscious patterns of behaviour that lead me into trouble, lead me into a place of being deeply unhappy, and beginning to react in a way that leads me into further unhappiness and into difficulties. So in these relationships, I've perceived myself as being incredibly loyal. That's my ideal, to be a very loyal person. It's one I hold very highly. I've seen myself to be very giving and self-sacrificing and what have you. But what my inventory revealed was that over time, when I begin to feel resentful, I begin to feel very dissatisfied, very unhappy and very used in the relationship. And what I have a tendency to do, which was shocking to see, is I begin to be disloyal, perhaps in my thoughts, which had never even occurred to me, was not a great thing, was blocking me from a higher power helping me with the difficulties I was experiencing. And subconsciously, I seem to put out a kind of a neediness in my social circle or whatever it is. And this kind of, you know, this has repercussions where I begin to receive attention, which fills the hole. I might not do anything about it, but eventually I conclude that the relationship I'm in clearly isn't working, when actually in real life I've made not enough attempt to look at what's not working and what my part is and what I can do with that. So today I'm in a long-term relationship, and it's not been without its difficulties, I have to say, but as a result of writing my sex ideal, and as a result of being able to ask God for help in the problems I'm having, as a result of not allowing my thinking to consider, if my guy was this, he things would be better, and my friend's partner does this, and my friend's partner does that, and if only I was with a man that da 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 yada yada. What I can do today is I can honestly review the resentments that I'm having, and I can live by the sex ideal that I wrote by turning to my higher power. And it really has turned things around in my relationship, which actually has been on the rocks several times. It's really turned things around. I'm able to work on it. I'm able to retain my identity. I'm able to give love authentically. I think I'm probably way over time. Sorry, I haven't got time with me. So I will leave it there. And thank you very much. Thanks also for running the meeting, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Shirley. Thanks for your share. Would anyone like to share? We still have time for about two or three shares. Please go ahead. If not, I'll just quickly jump in. Thank you very much, Leanne, for your share, and thanks for sharing your experience on this with us. I really love the fact that you clarified about the sex ideal, because I've done the steps the BBA way. I'm an Al-Anon, and this this for me was really, really important. And more importantly, that the sex ideal is about me and not about other people, how I want to behave in a relationship, how I want to be, how open I want to be, how honest I want to be, how I don't want to cheat. And because I have other friends who've done the steps other ways, and there seems to be a confusion about this. And of course, as everything is within, so should the sex ideal be contained within. And I really like the quote that you used at the end. So thanks very much. Thanks for your share. I'll pass. Thanks. So would anyone else like to share? There's still some time until we go into the crossfire meeting. So we can share. Thank you. I think someone is unmuted. I can hear them. Or if no one wants to share and they want to ask a question, we can do that as well.
Alice?
Hiya.
It's Amy. I've got a short little share, and then I've actually got a question for Leanne, so maybe it can segue into the crossfire meeting then.
Please go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to share the first time I did the steps the DBA way, I did the sex inventories everybody shared about, and it was stunning, you know, just the repetitive patterns. It was, and what was amazing, I had a lot of relationships that the other person didn't even participate in, you know, that a big pattern of mine was never to be honest with people and have really entire relationships in my head that didn't even involve the other person. So, you know, looking at that and looking at the person that I really wanted to be. And then I've been married for quite a while now, and which is just a bit of a miracle for me as a recovering alcoholic and compulsive eater. But the second time I went through BBA, I actually felt guided to do it on just relationships, like with people. And I sort of did a meditation and came up with 10 important relationships in my life, and some of them from the past. And did, I guess, I don't know if you'd call it a sex inventory, but just a kind of a relationship inventory, and that was really powerful. And I came up with a relationship ideal that was kind of about how I wanted to be with other people. And so I don't know, I kind of got the idea from my step guide. She had done one on friendship. I was just wondering if Leanne had ever done, you know, or what someone does, because obviously, you've been in BBA for a long time. You know, are you still writing them about the opposite sex, or do you ever write them about, you know, more general relationships? So that was all I had. Thanks.
Did you want me to answer that? Do you want to wait for me to go, for us to go into the crossfire meeting?
Hi, Leanne. Yeah, you can go ahead and answer that. Okay. We're very close to the crossfire meeting, so please go ahead.
Okay. I hope that my connection is good. So,
yes, it's better. Yeah, we can hear you better.
Okay, good. So I have heard people do that. I don't suggest it for people, especially if you're taking anybody new through the work. As you know, it's already tedious as it is, and it's typically it's a little more work than we need to do. I think in your situation, though, listening to what you said and how you somewhat had like some fantasy ideas of people that weren't really sex relationships or relationships, I could see how you would want to make that an inventory as a relationship inventory as opposed to a sex inventory. Totally get it. I don't think that's necessarily is a fit for everybody, because you can get the same, because see, like you said, what it's never about the person in the first column. And we can see ourselves and the fears that are driving the delusion when we write the resentment inventory. So sometimes if we could put those same people in a resentment inventory than as in a sex inventory. But the questions are different in the sex inventory. So listening to what you said and your experience, I think that, you know, where had I been selfish? you know, some of those questions that we can answer. Did I raise suspicion, jealousy, or bitterness? Can also apply to other people in relationships too as well. But I really wouldn't recommend maybe taking somebody through the work the first or even the second time that way. You know, I think it just becomes something that's kind of on an individual basis. If you think that you wanted to, like there's no wrong. It wouldn't be wrong. Let's put it that way to do that. I don't think so at all. I think as long as you're having an experience and you're able to uncover some things about yourself, that's what's important. And to be able to see the areas that are blocking you from God, that's what's important. Does that make sense?
Thank you, Leanne. Thanks for answering the question.
Sorry, Leanne. I had muted again, but thanks very much, Leanne. I was just kind of wondering what people who are in a long-term relationship, kind of like what the inventory starts to look like, you know, after you've sort of gone through the chaos of the addiction. And then, so that's all. Thanks.
Right. Really quick, let me just also add, too, like you said, I think a lot of the people that have been on the phone so far are married, a lot of the people that have shared. So, you know, when you do your inventory the first time, right, when you do resentment inventory, we can always get new people on a resentment inventory. But our sex inventory doesn't usually, hopefully it's not changing. Hopefully we're not adding new people. So we've already done the work for the sex inventory. The sex inventory typically doesn't change. So being able to look at the sex inventory using relationship inventory, as a relationship inventory, I don't think that's a problem. But then again, like I said, I wouldn't be taking people through the work that are newcomers that way the first time. So anyway, I just wanted to add that.
Hi, this is Judith.
Hi, Judith. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to answer a little bit for Amy there. The first time I went through was such an in-depth, historic, sort of a memoir of my entire sex life in groupings and things, because it was wild and crazy when it was younger. But then, you know, I'd been married 18 years at that point. Then I did put my husband on it as the last person. The second time I went through it, my guide asked me to go deeper into my own sexuality, into my own relationship with self. So I looked at my sexual self and the relationship I have, and wow, more was revealed. Insecurities, all kinds of interesting things. And even to do a relationship inventory with God, that was extremely powerful. And I did that in the sense of just in that sense, and also with I hope nobody is disturbed like this, but my guide took me and said it's, you know, to tie it into also of the personal sexuality was around any kind of fantasy and masturbation or anything, you know, anything where it's anything sexual with myself, whether it's about just how I feel about myself as a woman, or about my own intimacy with myself, my intimacy with my husband, my intimacy with God. That was a wow, eye-opening, very uncomfortable, really irritating, but dynamic experience. So I look forward to the next one next year. Pass.
Thank you, Judith. Thank you. So we have now reached the Crossfire meeting. Anyone can pose a question or comment on the topic of step 4, sex inventory and sex ideal. So when you're posing a question or making a comment or answering a question, please share for up to 2 minutes only. But we do have quite a bit of time, so we have about 15 minutes left. So please go ahead if you want to comment on the same question, or you want to answer the same question, or you want to ask a new question, please go ahead.
And I guess we can continue sharing as well if you want to do that. But mainly if we're focusing on the questions and this part. Thank you. Anyone? Would anyone like to comment or ask a question or share? I can hear someone is unmuted.
I'll ask a question for your group, Leanne, alcoholic. So when you go into your meetings, hear everybody's experience, because I know out here, when we share, those of us that in Book Awakening for a while, we go to our mainstream Alcoholics Anonymous or NA meetings you go to, and the little share that you have is potentially different, I'm assuming. What's the reaction from people in other groups to the way you share?
Great question.
Hi, Judith. Go ahead.
Well,
is that you?
Yeah, if anybody else wants to jump in.
Please go ahead, Judith.
What a great question, Leanne. In Overeaters Anonymous, I'm a compulsive overeater, recovered, and in Overeaters Anonymous, it's enough that half the population in our program doesn't even use the big book. There's so many pieces of literature, but it's completely diluted our experience down. And I was absolutely thrilled yesterday, I just want to say, that one of the trustees of the organization of OA was actually in the convention yesterday, and he was on a panel, and people said, you know, about the big book, blah, blah, blah. And he was very clear that Overeaters Anonymous has always accepted AA Big Book as a conference-approved literature. Therefore, the AA Big Book is OA literature. And I was just like, woohoo! Kind of like, why? Because I never really got the solution, and I had some abstinence. I had many years on and off. I never really quite grasped it, and I always lost it. And now for 5 years, as I've been working diligently in the Big Book and 3.5 years in BBA, it is absolutely clear to me now I'm getting the precise instructions. I now put and understand my precise problem and can have a precise solution. And rely on a power greater than me is what my primary purpose is in order to carry a message of any weight and depth. But I think when I'm in a meeting, live meetings, we have our own live meeting now in London, which is brilliant for BBA. But to attract people to that is not always easy. I think it's just that we have to keep saying that we are using the original solution, or the original solution exists and I'm following it precisely, or I find myself to be just like an alcoholic. I have a substance abuse problem. I can't metabolize it. I have an allergy. You know, I have to just stick with the message from the big book. That's all I can really do. And now we are going to start to try to attract people to come to our live OA BBA meeting. And we'll see how it goes. But I've always had kickback my whole, like the last 5 years, pretty much, quite a bit. But I'm just thrilled to see in London that there are some really solid big book meetings, and hopefully we will attract more people. Thanks, Pass.
Awesome.
Thank you, Judith. Thank you for answering that. Would anyone else like to pose a question or comment?
Hi, it's Britt again. And in answer to your question, I think this is Judith who shared. I was trying to do it by hearing, like Judith, in fact, Judith sharing. And sometimes people comment after meetings on maybe the way my sharing has changed, although I can't claim any recovery really. But However, I have noticed there's an element of controversy, which you've alluded to, which is a feeling that it's sort of not quite right to do the BVA thing, or it's not officially part of anything. So, you know, I hear about the AA thing, but if I'm talking to somebody or telling anybody about it, I always say I'm part of a big book study group, because for me that's just
yes.
And the other, actually, I've got a question. It's not really, it's not answering your question, and maybe it's slightly separate one, but about one thing that's occurred to me, and I suppose I'm asking it slightly preemptively for people who may be joining, hopefully from regular OA, is that some of the practices in meetings are different. So, for example, I'm pretty sure, yeah, I know there's a reference to crosstalk, but I don't know, it just feels slightly different in some of the sort of behaviours that are fairly prescribed in OA meetings. And I mean, this shut up actually, because I'm not sure I can pull up an example to demonstrate what I mean. But I think I'm just aware that, I'm pretty sure, but maybe this is a question, that all of the principles, all the traditions, all of the kind of suggestions about how a meeting is conducted or how people conduct themselves in a meeting, like saying I rather than you or we, little things like that, which I've always found important, and that's something I learned from Coda. That's a very specific, tiny example, but I think just because I'm aware there's a certain element of controversy, I suppose it's looking for the similarities to the regular practices or the practices in regular way, and how much they may be all there. I don't know, they cross over into BBA live meetings, so it's a bit of a mishmash in that. It's not a key question, it's just as we're talking, I thought I'd raise it. Thank you.
Thank you, Britt. Would anyone like to answer that? Or would anyone like to comment or pose another question? I would perhaps want to add a little something as well. It's sort of similar to what Britta said, that people do feel a, well, when I do tell people that I'm doing the BBA way, using the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, they do feel a bit that that's not the right way. I'm an Al-Anon, and I think each addiction sort of have their own books and their own ways of doing the steps. But I've only ever done it this way, and I have to say it really has worked for me. And I wouldn't want to do it any other way. I think it's a matter of what it works for people. But it has definitely worked for me, and that's why I keep on coming back. So thank you. So there is still some time. We have about 6 more minutes. So if anyone else like to ask a question or comment or answer any of the questions, please go ahead.
Leanne, I was wondering if you could, this is Judith, I wonder if you could share some of the early days of BBA and how it grew, if nobody else has another question on the topic tonight.
I'd love to.
Please go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, great. I hope I have a good connection here.
Yes.
So actually, just prior to me getting on the phone, on this phone meeting with you, I was working with somebody, a new sponsee, and I was going over the history of the Big Book Awakening. And really quickly, I want to thank you all so much for hearing your responses, because it's always interesting to hear people's reactions to how, you know, we share in meetings and things like that. And just real quickly, I know that I used to make the big mistake that when I would share in a meeting outside of the Big Book Awakening, I would say BBA, and it sounds cultish. People are like, what's that? Like, you know, and I have to be very careful. So I don't even necessarily mention Big Book Awakening, because the history of this work, I mean, even though we're writing in our books, is really the way the old timers did it. And if you remember in the preface and the forewords, it said 50% were getting sober immediately and 25% got sober after some relapses. And that's in our preface and our forewords. What is the difference today? I know all over the world now, those are not the numbers that we have today. And why is it people were 75% were staying sober? And today, at least in the United States, it's somewhere around 8%. Like, there's something horribly wrong. And it's because the message in our Big Book is not the message in the meetings. And the way the Big Book Awakening was designed was so that we can have a deep and effective experience with this work, right? We all know that. And nobody's doing that anymore. At least they're not here. So if we go back to 1950, there were a group of guys, and I think they came out of Canada, and they were these guys that could not stay sober. And they called themselves the Golden Slippers, because they kept slipping. And so they got kicked out of meetings. And what happened was, they said, how are we going to do this and how are we going to stay sober? They said, why don't we go through the book and we start writing in the book and we start making like statements into questions, and then we start answering the questions ourselves. Well, after a period of time of doing this, they started writing these questions in the book, the ones that we write today. And after a number of years, these guys noticed that they had some consecutive sobriety. And in 1975, 25 years of doing this, this one guy, Derek Cheater, who was at this convention, AA convention, was sharing his story. Joe Hawk heard this man share and thought, I've never heard recovery like this. So then Derek Cheater took Joe Hawk through the work. Joe Hawk then brought this to Mark Houston. And then we all know who Mark Houston is. Mark Houston had a recovery treatment center. And then this work was shared with a number of other people that eventually got to Dan Sherman. Well, Dan Sherman was like, why can't we write all this down? This is too hard for you to take me through the work and to tell me, you know, word for, line by line, where to write these questions. So that's how the Big Book Awakening started. So then Dan Sherman created the workbook that you all have with those questions that originally started with those guys back in 1950. And I'm sure that there's been some more questions that have answered, but been added. But that's initially where it all started, where these guys back in Colorado. So from there, Dan Sherman wrote this book that has made it easier now for us to write those questions and answer those questions on our own. And then about 15, 16 years ago, Tyla Colton, who is my sponsor, happened to get those CDs and those tapes that Mark Houston has that are on our website under audio. You can listen to Mark Houston. She heard Mark Houston said the same thing to herself. I've never heard recovery like this before, because this recovery had been passed down right from Derek Cheater to Joe Hawk. And these guys were all doing the work like we do. And so they'd heard this recovery. She had heard Mark Houston speak. And that's when she contacted Mark Houston in Texas and said, I'll fly you out here first class if you come and do a workshop for us. And so that's how it all started here in San Diego. That's why it's so huge here in San Diego. And we can thank Tyla Colton for that. Well, she brought Mark Houston out here before he passed away many, many years ago. And Mark Houston did this workshop. And then from there, we've just had workshops. And we would never, by the way, we never were supposed to ever be a fellowship. We were never trying to take the place of Alcoholics Anonymous. We just wanted a way to go through the work where we could take other people through the work and where we can have a deep and effective experience with the work. Never was it Tyler's intent or anyone's intent to start meetings, because we never wanted to be separate. But it just, you know, there was just such a need for this type of recovery. People were hungry. People were, most importantly, people were dying out here, you know, dying in sobriety, committing suicide, dying because they just weren't having an experience with the work. They weren't figuring out that they were missing the main ingredient, which was God. And that's what this work tells us to do. You know, it brings us in a closer relationship with our higher power. And so from that stemmed meetings out here, actually we started out with the meeting that was in, that we have right now. That's, you know, we got about 150 people at any given Wednesday night. And then there's also a meeting in Del Mar. But Tyla has been adamant about, we don't need any more Big Book Awakening meetings. What we need to do is to bring our recovery to out there to AA, because that's who needs it. Because if we just, all we're doing is making Big Book Awakening meetings, then we're just preaching to the choir. You know, we need to take our message and your message and bring that out to mainstream AA, so people who are out there dying, doesn't matter whether you have 30 days or 30 years of sobriety, you could die from that spiritual and a spiritual bankruptcy, right? That we typically are all suffering from. So that's basically the history of the Big Book Awakening and how it was brought here to San Diego and how it got so big.
Thank you so much.
Wow, thank you so much, Shelley, and thanks for that. That was really, really interesting to listen to. And thanks, everyone, for asking the questions and for commenting and for sharing. So that is all the time that we have for today. If you'd like your contact information listed on our contact list email, please email Judith at judithwilson.com with your name, last initial, time zone, phone number, and or email address, and what program you practice. Do we have any announcements today?
Just a shout out for the live OA BBA meeting in London at the Royal Free Hospital, Pond Street, Wednesdays at 7 p.m.
Thank you, Judith. So once again, a huge thank you to Leanne and to everyone who's been sharing today. So our next meeting is I should have the date here. So 15th, right? 15th, Judith. We will close. Judith?
Yes. Yes.
Is there something you want to add?
No, next meeting, yes, correct, 15th.
Yeah, so next meeting, 15th. So we will now close with the seven-step prayer. So please unmute and share us and join us in the prayer. So my Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad.
I pray that you
now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. Thank you, everyone. Thanks for attending.
Thank you, Leanne.
Thank you
so much. Thank you, Leanne.
Thank you.
God bless you.
Thanks,
Leanne.
Thank you. God bless you all.
Thank you. And Leanne, I'll see you on Wednesday, the 7th of November in San Diego. Leanne, are you still there? No, okay.